is Roger Green, host of the Surfing the Mesh Tsunami podcast. This week, we are offering five conversations from episode 5. I will look at the role NITs will play in 2024 with Naeem Alkhouri and Ian Rowe. Plus, from the vault, our first discussion of MASEF last summer. Our vault comes from a conversation last summer with Mazen Nuruddin about his recent first publication regarding MASEF. It has a fairly complete opening summary, so let's allow that introduction to tell the story of the episode. Today, we are offering four conversations from episode 39. Our discussion with Mazen Nuruddin about his recently published paper discussing the new MASEF blood-based non-invasive test for fibrosis and fatty liver disease, the first test to take advantage of metabolomics in a potentially commercial setting. Louise Campbell starts this conversation with a question that Mazen Nuruddin describes as making a great point. She asks whether there are comparisons of MASEF to liver stiffness testing. In the immediate follow-up, Louise points out that most metabolomic analysis is hindered by requiring elevated AST ALT levels, which are not necessarily drawn for patient blood work in most countries, but Mazen notes that MASEF has no such requirement, which leads Louise to term the entire test and experiment exciting. At this point, Joern Schattenberg joins the conversation to ask two questions, one about single testing versus sequential testing, and the other about how difficult it will be for non-experts to sample and run these tests. In response, Mazen indicates that physicians who use MASEF in office setting will get back a single report with all necessary conclusions in kind of a red light, yellow light, green light, easy to interpret format. The rest of the conversation is spent with Mazen answering other questions from Joern, Louise, and me. NITs, particularly blood-based NITs, are an important area for academic and commercial development. This conversation introduces an exciting new blood-based NIT that brings metabolomics into the discussion for the first time, and it provides an enticing glimpse of what our future might hold. So sit back, listen, learn, enjoy, and when you're done, join the dialogue on our LinkedIn discussion group.
Louise Campbell.
Mazen, can I just ask, because obviously the setting for MASEF is going to be clinical research, predominantly some of the gastro centres. Now, most of those are going to have FibroScan. Did you look at adding MASEF to liver stiffness to see if it was even more accurate, like you've done with the FIB4?
Mazen Nuruddin.
That is actually a great point. We have not done that. The reason why I actually will comment on your first point, what we're trying to do is not clinical research only. We're trying to trying to find something convenient for GI HEP as well as the primary care for the second test after the FIB4. So as you know, a lot of people, they don't have a FibroScan and they say, what do we do? So here, the FIB4, they can do the FIB4 and then they can send that test, send out, which can perform equivalently to the FibroScan. And it will not just be clinical research because as I mentioned, it will be commercially available per the company in the US later this year or early next year. And I can tell you what else like we're heading to in the future with this test, which is important to see how well it is in other contexts of use. But that's the concept of the MASEF test.
Adding it to FibroScan may well even make it more predictive. But also one of the strengths of FibroScan is the fact that you do not need abnormal liver function tests to detect a liver at risk, whereas a lot of the metabolomics do require elevated AST, ALT, for example.
Which this test did not require. We had normal liver enzymes and that.
But no, it's exciting.
Joern Schattenberg.
Yeah, the point you're making is clearly it'll be more applicable if you have a one-time test versus a sequential testing, moving patients back and forth, sending them to specialists. On the other hand, a two-tier system testing allows to test in primary care and then refer to secondary care. We know there are weaknesses. So I think there are pros and cons to these approaches. Questions about costs then, and you know this well, and you've done some cost analyses in this area. And the second question I would have is, of course, to the metabolomics. How difficult will it be for non-experts to sample and run these tests? You mentioned it might be available at the large scale, so it sounds feasible.
Yeah, that's a great question. So when people hear like there are 12 lipids and in addition to liver enzymes and BMI, they're like, oh God, another formula and calculator and I have to plug it in. The answer is no. It's going to be one sheet with the spectrum of MASLD, no MASLD, NASH, no versus MASLD and NASH and F2 versus not, and it will come in one report as you mentioned. So it will give you the score and an interpretation of the score. We also have like similar to the FIB4 and NAFLD fibrosis, to FIB4 and the transient elastography by the guidelines. There is a gray zone, and the gray zone was similar to the FAST as well as the transient elastography statistically. Nevertheless, if you do the FIB4 followed by MASEF, similar to FIB4 followed by transient elastography, which is a concept concept now is well known in hepatology. If you do sequential, you narrow this indeterminate zone, and that's what MASSIVE did, similar to what the FibroScan that preceded by the FIB4 did. So the indeterminate zone is quite low. And as Louise mentioned, in primary care in the GI and hep offices, you can always add a FibroScan and see what it is. So some of the work actually we are looking to look into the future is, one, to start with MASSIVE immediately rather than FIB4. We stuck in this paper to the FIB4 first, followed by MASSIVE, because it's in the guidelines now, it's acceptable, it's applicable, and it's cheap. Of course, MASSIVE will be a bit higher because it requires special testing. So we'll look into that and its cost effectiveness as well. Another thing we're going to look at, now we started having effective drugs, we're looking into partnership with companies that they showed efficacy with their drug. And there's so many of those, like Madrigal, Novo Nordisk, Akero, 89 Bio, and many others. So we want to see if the MASSIVE moves the same direction with the histology, which you imagine that it should, if it's like reflecting the spectrum so precisely. Finally, we will also look into what the FDA and EMA are looking for, which is the prognostic predictability of MASSIVE in correlation with outcomes. And we need cohorts to test that, such as the NASCRN, and if there are such samples.
Can I ask, with the FIB4, obviously, we're looking at an age cutoff of around about 35. Was there any age difference? Because both of the cohorts, I think the average age was 51 and 54. So is there any strength or weaknesses that you've noticed in different ages and sexes?
No, actually, we did the analysis in the MASSIVE in particular. We did sub-analysis, not all of them published. No difference in age, no difference in diabetes status, no difference in BMI and other parameters. What the reviewers asked us smartly is to look at MASSIVE in shorter form, meaning you have lipids, you have liver enzymes, and you have BMI. So they asked us to take BMI, take out the liver enzymes, and see if lipid alone will do the job, or, you know, different parameters. And what we found at the end, that adding all these parameters to each other, again, the doctor does not need to bother with them. Rather, he will get the report. But adding all these parameters to each other was important to improve the accuracy of this test, which makes sense, right? You have liver enzymes, you have a very important factor in the metabolic syndrome, which is BMI, and you have the lipids, which reflects the underlying pathophysiology in the liver and probably somewhere else of the disease, all combined in a holistic type of test.
Sounds great. Could you therefore use it retrospectively to assess some of these big cardiac studies? Or do you need, they don't probably do the lipid profiles. I was thinking about trying to assess how many were at risk, muzzled and MASH in those studies, but without the lipid component at that level, I suppose you wouldn't be able to get that, would you?
I mean, we need cohort, try to test things. It's a good amount of blood to make sure we're testing, validating, and do it very precisely. So we are on the search for, as I mentioned to you, a search for a cohort that will look into outcomes, and the NIT that we talked about could be one of them in the future. We are searching the cohort for testing response to therapies.
That's what excites me, is at the moment we're missing all of the patients on these big cardiac studies, the diabetes, the weight loss, that we're not assessing because we're not using other than basic liver function tests, and we're certainly not fibroscanning those patients. Whereas to put in a test like this could say how many at-risk patients were within those big cohorts, and did that differentiate in the outcomes of medications or placebo, for example. That's the sort of exciting thing that this could open as well.
Yeah, and you're right. And when I say we're looking for outcomes, definitely MACE will be one of the things that we look at in such cohort. What I can share is that we already have, although the paper is very green and just came out, we had an interest from pharma to test these cohorts in terms of their treatment response. So we're still at early stages. So hopefully, like, you know, contracting all that will not be an issue. And I will see the science results soon. So it's exciting that way.
That's pretty elegant, Mazen. I mean, one of the things that strikes me is that you can do an awful lot of things with this one result. You can use it in research, you can use it to diagnose, you can use it to, over time, if I understand you correctly, assess effectiveness of different drugs in different patients. That's a pretty elegant platform to be operating from, if I understand correctly. Am I getting that right?
Yeah, and also for inclusivity of the field, the other test we have like this is the NIS2, right, that just came out in JHEP. don't mean to say this test is better than the other or the other way around. I think both should be tested in future cohort. NIST2 was tested by Nimble. Nimble also had the metabolomics by this company that produced this test, but they did not have the massive test yet. So Nimble needs to test that. I mean, one of the things about the NIST2 is that it came only from the GenFit cohort and it was not tested in other cohorts. Here, arguably, we have like international multi-center, as Jorn mentioned, like widespread population that have been tested on it. And in the future, these tests need to be compared to each other and see how they do in terms of the diagnostic, how they predict response, and finally, how they correlate with the outcome.
Roger Green.
If you compare this to NIST2, is there reason to believe over time that one will be more cost-effective or easier to distribute widely? Or do we just not know the answer to that yet? How would you approach an issue like that?
I mean, they will probably both be one of the major laboratories, and we have like few in these countries. I don't have an idea about the cost of this versus that and which one will be more expensive, but you really want to think about multi-step, and that's why we did the comparison fit for with massive. So we wanted to stick to the guidelines and start with the cheap test that now everyone is agreeing on. Although I have also like some research now started looking at the data, and fit for has its downsides, and I'm not going to go to that today. We went to it in other episodes, but starting with fit for followed by a blood test could be on the long term more convenient and cheaper than having machines and referring to the patient and fasting and go to another facility and all these things. So again, it's not a competition. We're just trying to reach precision rather than which one is better and patient convenience.
Along the line of comparing it to other blood-based markers, Mazen, it's very intriguing to just add on a number of metabolites or lipids and inflammatory cytokines. From your feeling, I mean, maybe you've played around a little bit and you took out some or you added some of the groups in Spain. Will we, by expanding the number of analytes, will we increase sensitivity and specificity? Will we increase the noise? What's your feeling here? I mean, FIB4 clearly underperforms because it doesn't have a lot of link to the pathophysiology. It's a fibrosis test and not a good one. The more metabolites you add, the closer you might get to certain subphenotypes and stuff. Not sure you have an answer, but you know, your gut feeling.
I do. So again, the credit will go to Rebecca Mayo, Christina Alonso, and Yvonne Martinez Arnes that they did a lot of these analysis. So the goal is really, right, to find the least possible so the cost is down, but yet you maintain accuracy, as you said. And they have done a lot of phenotyping. We have another paper in gastro and animal and humans phenotyping by metabolomics, and they were much higher. So one of the exercises or the stress test with this test that Rebecca as well as Yvonne like went down to the least possible test that we need and still maintain the accuracy. And they came up with these 12 different lipids. So that's a great question now, Jorn. And it's very important for the cost as well, timing. So they did it that way.
And now back to Roger.
We hope you've enjoyed this recording. If you have any questions or comments about the content of this conversation or the entire episode, please put them in the review section of the page from which you downloaded this conversation, or send an email to questions@surfingmash.com. We're still working on next week's episode, possibly a payer episode, possibly something else. Watch, listen to this space for details. Until then, stay safe, surf on. We'll see you on the podcast. Bye-bye now.